Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century. All right, we're back. It's 13 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest this hour. Our new friend is Donald J. Boudreau. Don Boudreau is the president of the Foundation for Economic Education. Prior to joining the FEE, he was a professor of law and economics at Clemson University. He also served on the economics faculty at George Mason University, and he also has been a visiting fellow in law and economics at Cornell Law School. He received his Ph.D. in economics from Auburn University and his law degree from the University of Virginia. He's lectured all over the world and on a wide variety of topics, including the nature of law, antitrust law, and economics and international trade. He's been published in a number of publications, some that you might have heard of, like that little publication called The Wall Street Journal, also Investors Business Daily, The Washington Times, and on and on. Don, welcome to the show.
My pleasure.
It's good to have you with us. How's everything going?
Going well.
Now, you're up in New York, and you guys got some bad weather up there today, don't you?
Well, the weather here in New York isn't very good. We're about 20 miles north of Manhattan, and
yeah.
We're having something like an ice storm.
I was noticing that the Weather Channel actually has this morning a severe weather expert who's doing nothing but talking about the storm that is dumping on you guys right now.
It's really incredible. It's really incredible. Fortunately, I live close enough to work, so I can walk. But
yeah.
All my fellow employees, I don't think they'll be coming in today because the roads are treacherous.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's that way. You guys are getting a lot of the weather that has been stored up for the last couple of years, because you really hadn't had that much bad weather in the last couple of years, had you?
Last winter was the warmest winter on record.
Yeah.
In New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to my moving to New York, my wife and I lived for 5 years in South Carolina. And every winter we had in South Carolina was colder than last winter in New York. Not true this year.
Hey, tell us about the Foundation for Economic Education.
Foundation for Economic Education, or FEE, as we call it for shorthand, is a free market organization, a libertarian organization, if you will. It was founded 53 years ago in March of 1946 by a fellow named Leonard Reed. We publish a monthly magazine called Freeman Ideas on Liberty. We've published that since 1955. We do student seminars and regional seminars for adults all around the country. We have a website. Can I give the address?
Absolutely. Please do.
www.fee.org.
Mm-hmm.
We publish occasional papers, and our goal is the very simple one of spreading both the ideas and the ideals of free markets, of free people, a society that is not highly politicized, and frankly talking about the dangers of government that grows too big and too arrogant.
All right. Which speaks to a lot of us. I think there are a lot, I agree with a lot of the things that you guys profess, and your organization, though, is not as much of an activist organization as it is an advocacy, an education organization.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. There are lots of other free market outfits that deal with the policy end, and I applaud them and usually agree with what they do. We don't get involved in the current debates. We don't get involved in partisan politics at all. We accept no government money. Instead, all our funding is from private contributors. We are
mm-hmm.
a tax-exempt outfit.
Mm-hmm.
But our goal is education, and we operate on the principle that if you give to well-meaning and open-minded people the truth, that most of those people will come to accept it. And we don't force anything down anyone's throat. We just present our ideas and hope that the strength of our ideas carries the day.
Well, tell us what your definition of a free market, or the free market, however you wanted to term it. What is your definition of the free market?
of course, you can give a long definition or a short definition. The shortest possible one, I think, is a free market is the economic arrangement that naturally emerges when private property rights are widely respected and secure from government intrusion and from criminal activity. And so if I have a set of private property rights, I can do with those property rights what I wish, as long as I don't interfere with the similar right that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You and I can exchange those rights. I can accumulate more. I can accumulate less. And so as long as the property rights are secure, then I think you have a free market, the ability of people to voluntarily, freely purchase and sell their rights is what I call a free market.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people listening will say, well, we have that now, don't we? Well, you would disagree with them a little bit, wouldn't you?
Well, we certainly don't have, we don't have as much of a free market as I would like. It's true, in a sense, everything is relative, and you can look at a lot of countries throughout the world, a lot of countries throughout history, that have been less free than us. America is still, by and large, a private property country. I can go out to my automobile, and it's my car. I don't worry very much about the government taking it away, although under certain circumstances that can happen. But government does so much today that I think is both ethically and economically, that I think is ethically inappropriate, and I know is economically inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And also constitutionally inappropriate. The federal government today does things that were simply not envisioned by the founding fathers.
Let's talk about, let's give some specifics.
Oh, gee, where to begin? one of my favorite recent ones is the toilet regulation, the toilet tank regulation.
The amount of water
The amount of water that people are allowed to have in their toilet tanks, their own toilet tanks, in their own private
homes. That's a classic absurdity, isn't it?
You bet. And on a number of different grounds. Let's talk about the economic grounds first.
Hey, Don.
Yeah.
You hear that music?
I do.
That means we have to take a break. That's the way this works here on the show.
That's one.
Don, stand by. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a lot of fun with our new friend, Don Boudreau, the president of the Foundation for Economic Education. My phone number on this show is 888-822-8255. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our phone number is 888-822-8255, and that's the number to call if you want to talk to me or my special guest and our new friend, Don Boudreau, the president of the Foundation for Economic Education. Or if you want to answer one of my trivia questions, which I gave you earlier in the hour, and if you didn't get them, give me a call and I'll read them to you and you can take a shot at them. And that gives you a chance to win a copy of Gary Shilling's book called Deflation. Very good book that I recommend to you. 888-822-8255. And Don Boudreau, as I said, is our special guest. Don, when we took our last, just before we took our last break, we were talking about some of the things that government, some of the ways government imposes itself on what could otherwise be a free market.
Right.
And you were talking about the new toilet regulation. Actually, they're not that new. What are they, about 10 or 15 years old?
Oh, no. It only went into effect 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, it did? I thought it was older than that. Okay.
It might have been passed that long.
You're right about that. But now, that's actually created a toilet black market for the old kind.
That's right. That's right. Sounds like something you'd hear about in the old Soviet Union.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't mean to...
the audience why that law is in effect.
Well, the ostensible reason is that we're having a water shortage, mm-hmm. and what the legislatures did was look at California, and there are water problems in California created by government.
Yeah.
Right. Now there are no water problems east of the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
None. They just don't exist. But like everything the national government does out of Washington, it's one size fits all. So even if the small toilet tanks are appropriate for California, there's no reason to impose small toilet tanks on people from New Orleans.
Well, let's talk about some regionalism here for just a minute. You and I both know that one of the big problems they have in California is photochemical smog,
mm-hmm.
from primarily from all the vehicles they have out
there. That's right.
So California, as an individual state, has much higher emission standards. In fact, their vehicles have to have special ignition systems so that...
those are imposed by the state legislature.
Imposed by the state. Now, how do you feel about that? Does that follow with your opposition? Is that the same thing? Would you be as opposed to that as you are to the toilet regulations?
I'm a pretty radical free market guy.
Yeah.
But if I had to rank those two, no, the toilet regulation is a much more ludicrous and obviously wrong regulation. Yeah.
But do you allow for the do you agree that they have the right and maybe it's a good thing for them to have these emission standards that they have?
It's certainly better for those kinds of regulations to be imposed by the states rather than by the national government. Yes.
Okay, but now see that's my question. In other words, you don't have a problem if the states do it. It's just the federal government.
Well, look,
I'm finding a little chink in your armor here, John.
No, I'm. There can be a problem with so-called pollution, where byproducts of production processes harm other people, and it's okay, it's acceptable. To me,
that is for the improvement of the health and the well-being of
yes.
the people of California. Because before they did that, they had major problems, and it still can be pretty brown out there sometimes.
But having said that, let me say that there's a danger. Even when we can identify something a good that government can do, there's always a danger when you give the government the power to do that good.
Right.
It will always overstep its bounds. And
always.
In California, it does the same thing. The environmental regulators become captured by special interest groups, whether they be industries or the radical environmentalists.
Right.
So the result, I'm not sure that the result is better than if we just had no government interference at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But certainly, if we're going to have government interference, it should be done at a more decentralized level like the state rather than the national government.
Exactly. What are some other examples? I know one of the things that I want to talk about that I have on my mind is minimum wage.
Yeah, it's an atrocious law.
And I agree with you.
Yeah.
And what do you think about that?
I think it's one of the most abominable pieces of legislation that any government can pass.
Is there any part, any premise of the minimum wage, any way that you could see that there would be a benefit for minimum wage?
No.
What about the people who... Might be making $2 an hour right now instead of five and a quarter if it weren't for that.
It's true. There are certain people who are benefited by the minimum wage.
All right, hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, it's 29 after the hour. We're going to talk a little bit more about the free market when we come right back with our new friend and our special guest, Don Boudreau, the president of the Foundation for Economic Education. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It's 44 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingate, the Small Business Advocate, and you're listening to the show that is dedicated to helping you make payroll on Friday. And our special guest is Don Boudreau. Don is a new friend, and he's the president of the Foundation for Economic Education, and he is a guy who believes in the sanctity and the purity of our marketplace. He wants it to be a truly free market, and in most cases, I agree with him completely. Don, I know you have a website you've given out. I want you to do that again. I also want you to give your 800 number out, and I want you to tell our audience a little bit about your magazine.
Well, our website, again, is www.fee.org. And we encourage everyone to visit it. We just redesigned it recently. I think it's very attractive and useful and helpful. And we're located in Irvington on Hudson, New York, which is about 20 miles north of Manhattan, and we have an 800 number, which is 800-452-3518. And you can call in and order our magazine. We have a magazine called The Freeman Ideas on Liberty. It's a monthly magazine, and we have the articles in there are always short and clearly written, to the point pieces that deal with free market economics and free market philosophy and history. I know you had I think, a guest on your show in the past, Bert Folsom.
Oh, yeah, our buddy Bert. Yeah, Bert's been with us several times.
Bert writes quite often for our magazine, and his pieces are among the most popular because it's really good, entertaining history.
Bert's with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy out of Midland, Michigan.
In Midland, Michigan, yeah. Bert's a good friend. And so, again, our 800 number is 800-452-3518, and we have a magazine called The Freeman, Ideas on Liberty, and we have an introductory rate of $19.95 a year.
And how is that a monthly?
It comes out monthly. Comes out monthly on time every month, and it's now available for the past few months. It's now been available on many in many Barnes and Noble bookstores and and other booksellers.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get the word out. We have Walter Williams, the economist. Walter Williams is a quarterly columnist in our magazine.
Good.
He often. You'll hear him sometime on talk radio.
And you are a nonprofit, and you do accept donations. If someone checks out your magazine and or your website, and they think that you guys are doing some good things for the marketplace, then
they
want to send you $10 or $1 million, they can do that, right?
We take any amount from 1 cent on up. We accept from the government. We accept absolutely no government funding.
Right.
We are a tax exempt organization. All our funding is from. Generous contributors who like our work and want to support free market ideas and ideals.
Right. Check it out, folks. I think it'll be educational. Don, let's get back to our discussion on minimum wage and as one of the ways that government intrudes on our marketplace. And you know, I've never made minimum wage. In fact, that when minimum wage first hit, I shouldn't say when it first hit, but when it was at about $1.10, I was working for below minimum wage. Believe it or not, the company I worked for didn't even pay minimum wage, and I never exactly knew why. But anyway, I started out my very first real job where I got a regular payroll check was I made 85 cents an hour. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so I always wanted to make minimum wage. And you know what? I've never earned minimum wage. I went from below to above. And so I know that it does help some people, but I also know that it hurts some people. And you mentioned one of the things that really annoys me, though, about minimum wage more than the fact that I don't have a problem with minimum wage being at 5 1/4. What I have a problem with is politicians and bureaucrats like Robert Reich and Ted Kennedy using minimum wage as a political football to kick it around and to try to beat up on people like you and me who thinks that it shouldn't be raised unnecessarily. They use minimum wage as if everybody's wage was based on minimum wage, and if the government didn't give you a raise, you wouldn't have a raise.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that insults your ability to earn a wage, to earn a raise, and negotiate, and to be productive, and to be responsible for your own for what you make.
Absolutely.
That insults you, as far as I'm concerned. But you said something a minute ago. You said that raising minimum wage hurts some people, which you're right. It hurts some small business owners. It's actually put some small business owners out of business because it made it prohibitive for them. Their payroll became prohibitive for the amount of money they were making. And so you act. I heard you sounding.
That's one reason it was passed. It was passed in 1937.
Right, way back, the very first time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is, you sounded very compassionate towards small business owners. But I happen to know that you are you may be a little less passionate about small business owners in your stand on predatory practices by some of the big box companies.
Well, I don't call them predatory practices, although I know a lot of people do. I support the free market, and I have no particular feelings one way or the other about small business people, big business people, medium business people. I like a depoliticized society with secure private property rights. And I guess what you're referring to is the fact that that companies like Walmart, in some retailing, Barnes and Noble bookstores,
they lower their prices, and there have been examples where small business owners who had been successful before went out of business because those stores showed up.
That's true, but I don't oppose that.
Stand by. We'll talk about that some more when we come back right after these messages. Folks, it's 50 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is Don Boudreau with the Foundation for Economic Education. All right, we're back. It's 54 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest and our new friend is Don Boudreaux. Don is the president of the Foundation for Economic Education, and we're talking about the free market, whether we have one or not, and what we've got to do to get one, which Don and I agree on most of these issues, and that's that one of the ways to have a really free market is to get the government out of it. And as you know, my audience knows, I really want to get the government out of our marketplace as much as possible. And when we took the last break, I said something about Walmart and some of the other big box companies. We use Walmart as a sort of a generic name. It really isn't, but because there are other companies, there are the home improvement companies and some of the other big box companies, what I call them, so they don't think I'm just picking on one. Mm-hmm. But the big box companies, when they move in, I'm perfectly content to put my money on small business when it comes to competing head up, fair and square with the big box companies. I know guys who are doing it side by side, and they're just servicing their customers within an inch of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're charging more than Walmart, mm-hmm. and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But where the problem comes in is when there are scenarios where the big box companies lower their prices below what everybody knows is cost. One of the classic examples is gasoline. One of the things that competitors, people who sell gasoline know, is they know how much gasoline costs at the rack. And everybody pays the same. And so they know when someone's selling gasoline below cost.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
that has run some people out of business that I personally know.
Well, in my view, people should be, whether they be small businesses or big businesses, big box companies, people should always be allowed to strike free bargains with whoever they wish. And if someone wants to sell gasoline or books or toilet paper or whatever good you're talking about at any price, whether it be above cost or below cost, in my view, that's fine. I have studied this issue, and I do know, and I can say this is a consensus among economists, that there is no evidence, or there is very little evidence at best, that such pricing ever leads to consumer harm, ever leads to higher prices in the future.
Well, whether it leads to higher pricing in the future, I'm convinced that it does cause, that it has caused some businesses to go out of business. Now, if those people were inefficient, as you say, one of the words that I know you like to use, or if they are just not capable of competing, that's one thing. But if they've been competing, if they run a good operation and the prices are just so lowball that they just cannot compete, then that causes them to go out of business. And if it's done fair and square, I don't have a problem with that.
But I have a bigger problem with is the government agent policing what prices are. You see, keep in mind, Jim, if you give the government the power to tell Company A, to dictate to Company A what its prices can be, you're creating a monster that can eventually turn on you and dictate you what your prices can do.
What about if that organization is the state instead of the federal government? How do you feel about that? Back to my California example.
Well, for practical purposes, if government action is going to take place, I would prefer it to be done by the state rather than the national government. But
right.
I'm still, whether it be the state government or the national government, I think it's inappropriate to have politicians or bureaucrats dictating prices and overseeing prices. That's something that should be left to the free market.
Don, we've got to go for this hour. Thank you very much for being with us. We're going to have you back on again. We'll continue this discussion. It's very interesting. You did a great job.
Thanks so much. My pleasure being here.
Thanks, Don. Have a good one.
You too, Jim.
All right, folks, I got to go. Before I do, I want to thank the most important members of the Small Business Advocate Show, my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.